Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us this week is Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association, Robert Schneider. The New York State School Boards Association, NISBA, is the statewide voice for the interests of public boards of education. Welcome, Robert Schneider. Great to have you here.
Well, thank you, Alan. I really appreciate you giving me the time and this format to talk about the school budgets and other things public education related.
Tell us a little about your background, because, you know, people listening to the radio like to hear who we're talking to. So tell us a little about you.
Oh, sure. I grew up in the Capital District area. My father was an attorney and my mother was a teacher for many years. I come from a teaching family, so I know the importance of the teaching profession and how it impacts our students and our communities and our country. I've worked with the New York State School Boards Association for 22 years now. Wow. My area before I became the executive director was more administration, operations, those type of things. But I got the job. It's going on my second year now, and it's been great. And we all got through the pandemic together. And what a challenge that was. After getting through that pandemic, I think I can update my resume because a lot of things came my way that I never expected.
So politically, Bob, how important is the School Boards Association? I mean, I know, for example, that every once in a while you see somebody who got their start in politics on a school board. But are they important?
Well, I think the way I look at it, school boards are important for their local communities, for the public education system. We see that the average tenure for a school board member is about 6.25 years in New York State. We don't really track where they go to the next step. We have seen people on school boards that move to county seats, other political positions. But I don't think that's really a big part of school board service. I think it's more people giving back to their community, the love of their community, and how they can make it better and how they can improve the school district and the student experience.
So, Bob, what are the major issues that might get somebody to run for school board or get somebody to not like what's going on in a school? What are the issues that cause some dissension on school boards?
Oh, it really runs a broad spectrum. It's a local issue. We've seen many different issues. Could be a teacher situation, a coach getting fired. They want a certain program in there. They might be upset about the increased costs in the school district. But what's interesting, and our role is really key, is an individual school board member gets on a board. Maybe a lot of times they have a singular issue, but we help support the school board work effectively as a whole and work closely with the superintendent to make sure that mission, strategy, and other things, important things that they have to do, gets done. So what we can do and help them out, once you get on a school board, you're required to do some mandatory training, and we offer opt-in training in addition to that, governance training, legal education, policy education. School boards can only do certain things, and they do represent their community. But overall, we try to bring them together as one and have that proper governance activity and grouping. And therefore, you know, we hope that they can work effectively. A single issue candidate hopefully changes when they get on the board and understands that there's a lot more to do at the school board level, working with the superintendent, the community, and the teachers.
So now we have a Democratic governor, two houses of the legislature are Democratic, we have Democratic leaders in each house. Are you finding it easier to operate under this political arrangement than you did when the Republicans owned half the government?
Well, I've only been in this for a year and 5 months now, and because of the COVID issue coming up so quickly after I started working as executive director, I really don't have a clear answer on that. I do know this has been a great year as far as school budget votes. 99.3% of them were passed across the state. That's fantastic. That shows that, one, our communities in each school district are very much supportive of what that school district, what that superintendent, what that school board is doing for their community and their students.
Do you think that the COVID thing, because there's so much remoteness going on and there was so much unhappiness about kids being able to go to school, that that may have lit some fire under those people who previously hadn't understood what schools could do for their children?
Absolutely. I would say that would be a local issue. We heard a lot about that, where community members, parents were frustrated that their student couldn't go back to school full time. But we have to abide by what the Department of Health, the Governor's Office, State Education Department, the guidance they're giving us. And that's all based on the medical community, the science. What was really good to hear during this first year of this pandemic, in December, we surveyed out to our districts, and we saw that 83% of our districts were in the hybrid mode, which you know is both in classroom and virtually. So 83%, and the transmission rates in school districts throughout the state were very low compared to the surrounding communities those school districts were in. So kudos to, once again, superintendents, teachers, school board members. They had that was a heavy lift starting in September to make sure all the DOH guidance protocols, all the mitigation that had to happen, it was in place, and we saw that it worked. We did it right as far as all the COVID avoidance things that had to happen, masks, spacing, transportation, virtual teaching. And virtual teaching, let's face it, it didn't get out of the blocks well, but I have seen districts have adapted to the software programs and how to do it. Teachers have adapted. It's never a replacement for the in-classroom experience, but now it could be a complement to help students who might have their education experience might have been pulled back because of the virtual scenario, not like being in the classroom. So we've got some opportunity here moving forward.
Well, Bob, you know, let's face it. We know that school boards and the other political actors have not always gotten along. In fact, some school committees, school boards, have had real problems with their teacher unions. Has any of that changed?
Well, I think we all work together to support all students in public education. There are collective bargaining agreements, obviously, that are negotiated at the school board table, and we know we live in a tax cap environment, so there's a certain amount of increases and health benefits that are negotiated through. But at the end of the day, I think for the most part, there is a good relationship between the teachers and the school boards because they're both focusing in on the most important thing, the student.
You get into trouble, Bob, when there's dissonance between a school board and a union, or a superintendent gets fired, or communities get enraged over one split or another. Do you have to get in there?
Well, once again, we are a membership organization. We represent about 92-93% of the school districts in the state, including New York City. We have programs to support school boards and school districts. We have professional development training, as I said earlier, mandatory fiscal and governance training for new school board members. We do work with the legal firms in the state, as far as the New York School Association, New York State Attorneys Association, School Attorneys Association, we work with them closely. But at the end of the day, these are local issues that happen. We try to help the school boards govern where they should be governing and working with the superintendent. Yes, at times things don't work out. Superintendents have to leave. There are school board issues with the unions. We don't see a lot of that, though. It happens from time to time in more localized situations.
The governor has been in a little bit of trouble, as we know, what mm-hmm. with women issues and with nursing home issues. He is certainly not the political figure that he was during the initial phases of the pandemic. Are you feeling that in any way in terms of what you have to go and lobby for or do?
Well, from the governor's office perspective, we have a very good working relationship with his education attorneys and education staff. And we've been through a lot this past year, and the governor had challenges with the pandemic, and he was the main person dealing with it, but we got through it. I mean, in January, we were very nervous when the governor had to put a budget through where the federal stimulus that was coming in was going to supplant the state aid money, and we saw that as a potential fiscal cliff. But now, fast forward, we've got the federal stimulus money, we have state aid increases, and we also have the foundation aid, at least one-third of that payment that has been due us for many, many years as a result of that campaign for fiscal equity lawsuit back in early 2000. So we've been working very well with the governor's office.
Now, what about schools of education, you know, in the universities? Are you finding that your relationship with them is good enough to help individual school boards?
Well, I think we have a certain relationship with universities. That relationship is more closely aligned between state education department and obviously the universities. What we do see as far as the teaching ranks, we're working with the state education department to try to get more teachers of color into the teaching ranks. That's an important thing because the world we live in now, our students in the districts all around the state, a lot of them are going to be going out into this world, and it might look a lot different than the district they live in. And we found out working with SED that it was about a year ago. I don't think the statistic has changed.
SBC, 200 districts. SBC.
SED, State Education Department.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
So 200 districts in the state do not have a person of color in their teaching ranks or in their administrative ranks. So
wow.
That's something we've got to crack that nut. And how we do that, it's going to take time. And there's got to be a really important recruiting tool there, working with the universities, get students of color interested in the teaching ranks. It's important that we have diversity in our school districts throughout the state.
What accounts for the fact that there is that split, that there are so few people of color who go into teaching?
I honestly don't have that answer. SED would have that. I think part of the challenge is, you know, recruiting teachers of different backgrounds into certain school districts. There has to be, I would say, some kind of a recruiting program in place, and maybe school districts haven't done that yet. This is why you want to live in this community. This is what we have to offer, and incentives and things like that. That really, I don't have the background information on that one.
What is your group, the School Boards Association, thinking about having, amidst all of the controversy over policing, having mm-hmm. police people, persons, into school buildings?
Well, as you know, school boards are elected locally. They represent their local district. So a lot of these decisions need to stay in the local school district. Some districts, they have uniformed police in their districts. I've gone and visited school districts, and I've been greeted at the door by a police officer, and I saw the students interact with them. Other districts, they might have a different desire to have the police involved outside of the building in the community, but they probably don't want police officers in the building. It really is a local decision, and that's important. We have to hold on to that. We have to make sure that each district is comfortable either having law enforcement inside or keeping them out, protecting the community.
Let's go back to something you mentioned earlier in our conversation. So your reporting from the School Boards Association is that budgets passed at an overall rate of 99.2%. That's huge. Simple majority budgets passed at a rate of 99.7%. Mm-hmm. And budgets requiring supermajority override passed at a clip of 85.7%.
Mm-hmm.
This is better than most years. How come?
Well, I have an update for you, too, Alan. It's up to 99.3%. There was a few districts that hadn't reported yesterday. So we're up to the highest ever. We matched another year. I can't remember which one it was. We were at 99.3%. how come, to me, I think it is the community sees the importance of that school district, of that educational system, how it supports not only the community, but the students and their future. So I think it's a really great moment in time to see that number. And we saw that number jump up a little bit from last year. Last year, we had 98.4% budget passage. And remember, last year, they did the absentee ballot, which made it very easy for voters to put their vote in. They just had to open up the envelope, make their vote, seal it, and walk down to the mailbox. And we had a large voter turnout last year, and we had 98.4% passage in a very uncertain time. We did not know the financial circumstances or how long this was going to last last year. And now this year, fast forward, we're up to 99.3%. So we feel great about that. And to me, the community is supporting our school boards. As you know, school budgets are the only ones that are voted on by the community. Town, county budgets, they don't get voted on by the community. We put out the most transparent budget out there. We let the community members come in and say yay or nay on that budget. And it's an overwhelming support of our school district system.
So do we have any sense of what turnout was? You know, in the old days, the people who were interested in education showed up at the ballot box. But now everybody's getting a ballot. What percentage actually take the huge energy, folding it, putting it back in the envelope, and putting it into the mailbox?
Right. Yeah, that effort, great effort yielded about 25% of the community voted across the state last year during the pandemic, doing the absentee balloting. This year, we think we don't have the numbers yet. We're going to get those from the State Education Department next week, but we feel it's going to fall back to the normal range at around 8% of the community voted for their school district budgets and their school board members.
Well, that's terrible, considering the fact that so much, not to be contentious, of course, that's not in my, it's not in my personality, but, you know, 8%, when the largest part of all budgets are the schools, right?
Well, yes, and all I can say is the polls are open early morning up to 9 o'clock. The community has the opportunity to vote during the day. Like I said, it's transparent. It's open. The community has the right to vote it up or vote it down. And I think what was interesting, last year we had 25% of the community come out and 98.4% of those budgets were passed.
Now there's a big influx of federal money. You know, we have a president of the United States who's married to a teacher. We have a president of the United States now who has always been pro-education. You think that's made a difference?
I think it will help out. We were concerned with the second term of Betsy DeVos as far as her focus in on charter schools and other privatization of public schools. We do have somebody who seems more of a champion of public schools, so it should be helpful. So far, so good with the funding and those type of things, but we'll see.
Now, you mentioned charter schools. Let's talk about that for a minute. It seems to have quieted down, but there were years when school boards and charter schools were not saying nice things about each other. Can you give us a little précis of how that has changed or whether it has changed indeed?
Well, I think there is still concern about charter schools. And, you know, we've always advocated where a local district feels it makes sense for a charter school to be placed, they have a decision, they make that decision, because charter schools, the funding comes out of the public school coffers, and yet you still have all these other students that are sitting in that public education building, and it takes away from them. That's always been our position on that. So we do see that crop up occasionally certain areas, but we don't see a large growth in the charter school system, and quite frankly, the results are not favorable to charter schools. The public school focus should be the focus, but once again, there are pockets and opportunities for charter schools in the situations where there's local involvement. I know the cap, so, I believe, is at 400 right now in the state, but I don't think there's that many charter schools.
So Robert Schneider, who is, of course, the executive director of the New York State School Boards Association, charter schools have been seen as a fairly Republican idea. So my question would be, is there a split between those who you know, are basically Republicans in favoring charter schools as opposed to just public schools, regular public schools, because the charter schools get very angry when I say that they're not public schools because they technically are.
Correct. I would say I can only give you that answer from the membership perspective, and we have a very diverse membership on our school boards throughout the state. And as I said, we represent, I believe it's 93% of the school districts in the state. And those members on those boards come from a variety of political backgrounds and slants. We have an annual business meeting at our annual convention, and they give us a platform on what to advocate for and what not to advocate for. And continuously, even before I was involved in this position, we have always had positions pushing back on charter schools. So I see no politics on our school boards, and I hope that continues that way moving forward. This is all about creating the best school, public school system in that community, working with the superintendents, the teachers, and the external community.
Okay, fair enough. The lobbying that goes on to get money out of the legislature on behalf of school committees has been effective. And would you talk about the new supermajorities in the Assembly and the Senate, which are Democratic, pushing for more money?
Mm-hmm. Well, our organization, along with several other education stakeholders as far as lobbying, we lobby in the sense that we inform the legislators on information that is important for them to make their decisions. We're not involved in, you know, PACs and that type of thing. We have lobbyists on staff that are experts, both legal and legislatively, and we try to work with whoever is in office at the time and try to tell them this makes sense, this doesn't. We will oppose this, we have no position on this, or we approve this. But at the end of the day, they're going to have their legislative discourse and decide. But once again, we're informing them. We're supporting the students of public education in New York State, and we make these informed, if you will, recommendations to the legislature. They'll act on it accordingly, and we hope that they take our information, take it into account before they make a decision. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Now, not to be contentious, I taught graduate courses in lobbying for a long time. That's what every lobbyist says. You know, we're just informing them. We're not pushing them around, you know. We don't tell them what to do. Money doesn't follow. And in many of their cases, money does follow what the lobbyists ask for, and then money is given that way. So how will you be judged? In other words, you're a brand new guy, executive director of a major association, school boards association. So how will they decide whether you're any good or not?
Well, that's a good question. I get an annual evaluation every year. I have certain goals that I have to accomplish by then, and hopefully I do that. And, you know, from a lobbying standpoint, we're agnostic is the best way to put it. We don't have a pact. We inform. We're not going to, you know, we don't pay for receptions and things like that to meet the legislators. So
You want more money for your school boards, right?
Of course. Well, for our school districts, not our school boards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Well, board's in charge of you.
Yeah. Okay, correct. Yes. No, we do, because you know in school districts there's collective bargaining agreements, there's pension costs, now we have COVID costs, COVID mitigation. We've got HVAC, we've got barriers, we've got transportation costs. It costs more money every year to run school districts, and it looks like we're heading into an inflationary period in the future, so costs will go up. But once again, we have to deal with the 2% cap. For the most part, our districts stay under it.
Property taxes. Most people's property taxes are to pay, as I mentioned before, for their schools. There's been a lot of talk over the years of the state assuming that cost and not having individual communities doing it, so Scarsdale spends so much more money than another place might do. So what's your thinking on that?
Well, our thinking on that is right before the pandemic hit, Senator Shelley Mayer went around the state and had these focus groups on the foundation aid formula. And there are some issues with the foundation aid formula as far as being up to date, as far as data and other adjustments that need to be done. They have to be approved by the legislature. But we hope that her recommendations, when they do come out, will talk about that situation where there's equity in the system, because we hear the governor every year saying a school district spends $13,000 per student and then another one over $30,000. We think that the foundation aid formula should be looked at closer and try to work that particular formula so it does infuse equity into the system. There's outdated data. There's student enrollment data that's outdated. There's other things involved. It's a very complex formula that needs to be updated.
Nevertheless, one would wonder whether their kid would do better in Scarsdale in a learning situation than in a place with a much lower school budget, right?
I agree. There is an equity issue out there. We are addressing it as an organization, and I know the state will address it now that the funding is there. Keep in mind, the CFE case was in the early 2000s, I believe. It's 2020, and now we're getting the promise to fund it over 3 years. So that gives us an opportunity to look at equity and make sure those students that are disadvantaged, many are black and brown, but there are other students that need additional services. There's English language learners, there's disabled children, there's gender issues. So we're hoping that this is the opportunity, a time where all students will have more resources and opportunities so we can bring them all up.
Well, I wish we could talk longer, but we can't. We're out of time. Our guest has been Robert Schneider, Executive Director of the New York State School Boards Association. Bob, thanks so much for joining us. It's always fun when you're here. People think that education is very important. And
yes.
You don't get an awful lot of insight, you know, on the news for this stuff. So again, thanks for joining us.
Alan, I appreciate the time, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.